This is Movies for the Blind, episode 185, The Limping Man, part 1 of 2.
Got me out. Nobody got killed, did they?
Yes.
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. These days, one of the most highly regarded actors in Hollywood is Jeff Bridges. A couple years ago, he won the Best Actor Oscar for Crazy Heart, then was nominated again the next year for True Grit. And, of course, he's known to many as the dude in The Big Lebowski. It looks like after all these years, he may finally be better known than his dad, with whom he pretty much started his career 4 decades ago. Lloyd Bridges had his sons, Jeff and Beau, appear with him in the hit TV show Sea Hunt, part of another very long career of dozens of movie and TV appearances, from Roots to Seinfeld, from High Noon to Airplane. Here's a film he starred in a few years before he hit the sea with his boys, as he heads for an eventful visit to England. From 1953, this is The Limping Man. A passenger jet cruises above clouds. On board, a man squeezes past a stewardess as he makes his way up the aisle, checking his watch. He sits next to a man in glasses and looks around a seat.
You know what happened to my magazine, I had it?
I think the man behind borrowed it.
He looks behind him to a man whose face is obscured by his magazine. So he faces forward again with a smirk and thinks to himself,
I waited 6 years on this plane. 6 years. The whole world has changed in that time.
He closes his eyes.
And I hope that love and a woman haven't. In 1 hour, we'll be in London. In 1 hour, I'll know.
On the edge of the airfield, someone in a hat and trench coat uses a crutch to get out of a car. Banner Pictures Limited presents Lloyd Bridges, Moira Lister. The Limping Man. Turning the crutch upside down, the man works to remove the bottom of it, revealing the muzzle of a gun. With Alan Wheatley, Leslie Phillips, Hélène Corday. With the long-distance rifle unsheathed, the man crouches next to the car. Adapted for the screen by Ian Stuart Black and Reginald Long, from Death on the Tideway by Anthony Verney. The jet descends to a runway. Lighting, cameraman Jonah Jones. Editor Stan Willis. Assistant director Pat Kelly. Camera operator Ron Robson. Dubbing editor David Withers. Music composed by Arthur Wilkinson. Musical director Eric Robinson. The man moves to beside the car's front right wheel as the jet taxis on the tarmac. Produced by Donald Ginsberg, directed by Charles de la Tour. Soon after, the passengers walk down steps from the plane. A sniper leans against the fender to aim and peers down his sight at the people walking across the tarmac, including the American, who searches his pockets for a light for the cigarette in his mouth. He turns to the man behind him, and they pause as he offers a light. The other man goes down, and the American bends to him, asking for help. Later, waiting in line in the terminal.
See this fellow moving up now? He was standing right next to him when it happened.
At a desk.
Franklin Pryor?
Mm-hmm.
We're sorry to hold you all up like this, but this is rather an unusual event we've had take place.
Yes, I know. I wonder if I could make a phone call.
We'll try and arrange that as soon as possible. I'm afraid everyone on that plane will have to speak to the police first. You here as a visitor, Mr. Pryor?
Yes. For a couple of months this time.
See, you've been in England before then.
Mm-hmm.
This passport doesn't show it.
I was during the war.
Oh, I see. I expect you'll find things have changed a bit now.
Yes, I guess I have.
Is this right? You're a construction engineer?
Yes.
The official makes a note.
Right.
Then stamps the passport.
Now, I've stamped your passport for 3 months. If you want to extend your visit or conduct any business, you'll have to apply to this address.
He hands him a paper.
Now, after you've had a word with the police, they'll clear you through customs. We're sorry for the delay.
Pryor steps from the desk and into an office.
May I have your passport, sir?
Pryor hands it to him.
Thank you.
He opens it.
Franklin Pryor.
Yes.
Will you come this way?
They walk past two desks to a third.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sir, this is Mr. Pryor, Inspector Bragg.
How do you do?
Oh, yes, you were standing with a man when he was shot, weren't you?
Yes, I just asked him for a light for my cigarette. I heard a kind of a thud, and he folded up in front of me.
Noticed nothing else?
No.
Did you see him in the plane at all? Talk to him?
Well, I think he was sitting in the tail section. I was up front.
I see. I'll be with you in a moment.
Braddock steps away, and the first man, with light hair, sits at the desk.
You didn't hear the murdered man mentioned by name?
Nope. What was his name?
I don't know.
We had a passport, didn't he? Identification.
Well, yes, none of it checks. It was all expert forgery. We found a letter on him addressed to Kendall Brown. So temporarily, we call him Kendall Brown.
When Braddock returns, the first man stands for him to sit again.
Mr. Pryor, I understand you tried to leave the building after your group had been quarantined.
Yes, I was expecting someone to meet me here. They didn't show up. I wanted to find out why.
A lot of other people in a similar position. All the visitors were notified of the circumstances.
Well, I'm sorry.
Where can we reach you if we want to talk to you again later?
Well, I don't know where I'll be staying. I wrote my friend to make a reservation for me in a hotel, but, as I was saying, a friend didn't show up.
Well, can we get hold of you through your friend's address?
Well, I guess so.
Maybe have his name?
Her name is Miss French. It's number 7 Malvern Terrace.
7?
M-A-L-V-E-R-N.
Oh.
Braddock writes.
Thank you, Mr. Barr. We'll just go through there. The customs will look after.
I wonder if I can make that phone call first, please, huh?
Yeah. You can use that one over there. Just lift the receiver and give the operator the number you want.
He goes to it.
What were you saying, Jim? I think so.
Hello, would you give me Flaxman 5483?
Braddock glances at Jim. Another man tosses down a photo.
I've checked the photograph taken from the dead man's pocket.
Hmm?
It was taken at a bad angle as far as the number plate's concerned. The only thing that we can be certain of is the make of the car.
Any idea who the girl is?
No, sir. I wish I did.
I see what you mean. Well, this won't help us to find out who Kendall Brown was.
Well, sir, we've checked the records, but no such person seems to exist.
Thank you. That's all we needed to make this case perfectly simple. All right, you can go.
Don't you want to know the address?
What address?
The house in the background. It's South Hill Street, Chelsea. Not far from the river.
Braddock picks up the photo.
You sure?
Oh, yes, sir. The architecture is unmistakably Edwardian, with alterations. They're mostly flats nowadays, but this one here is number 39.
Braddock writes.
39. All right, thank you.
The man steps away, and Braddock stands.
Come on, Cameron, come on.
Where are we going, sir?
South Hill Street.
They walk past Pryor, who's on the phone.
There should be somebody there.
A phone rings in a loft apartment with no one to answer it. Later in town, Pryor tries again in a phone box. A woman arrives carrying a basket and a package. Hurrying to the table the phone sits on, she puts down the basket to answer.
Hello, Miss French's residence.
Hello, Miss French there?
No, I'm sorry, she's not.
Would you know if she went to the airport this morning? Did she leave any message? Or will you be there for a while? No, I see. Well, thanks.
The woman hangs up, then picks up the basket and walks off. Beside the phone is a framed photo, the same as the one the police found. Later on South Hill Street, Braddock and Cameron approach a door next to a young woman in blue jeans painting her fingernails on a railing. Braddock rings the bell. Cameron looks sideways at the young woman, who looks back at him directly, making him turn away. His gaze starts to drift to her again, but the door opens.
Sorry to trouble you, madam. We're from Scotland Yard.
Scotland Yard?
Just making a few inquiries. We hope you might be able to help us.
Oh, yes.
She picks up a milk bottle.
Do you recognize that lady?
As she looks at the photo, the young woman gets off the railing.
Yes.
And looks at it too, but the older woman pulls it away.
Does she live here?
No, but she used to be a visitor about a year ago.
Do you know her name?
I'm afraid I don't.
You haven't seen her recently?
Well, as a matter of fact, she was here twice this morning.
Oh? What for?
She was wanting to see Mr. Brown.
Mr. Kendall Brown?
Yes. He's got a room on the first floor.
I see. Well, do you mind if we take a look?
No, come inside.
Excuse me.
They step past the young woman, who starts to light a cigarette but has it blown out.
Get inside. Will you follow me, please?
She follows the others in and shuts the door partway as the landlady leads the detectives through the foyer and up the stairs. When Cameron pauses to look down, the young woman bumps into him. They go on into Brown's room.
This is it.
They walk around a central table, past drawers and bookshelves.
He only has the one room.
The young woman sits on the arm of a sofa.
Keeps it pretty tidy, doesn't it?
Oh, Mr. Brown's a model lodger.
Braddock steps to a desk and picks up headshots of women.
Theatrical?
No, not that I know.
He hands them to Cameron.
How long has he been with you?
Oh, he's been about 18 months now.
The young woman slumps on the sofa.
You know much about him?
No. Might be a traveler. He's been away this last week, expected back today.
Cameron steps over her legs.
Married?
I don't think so.
Braddock looks at a framed photo.
But,
Yes?
Well, the lady in that photograph you showed me, she's been here quite a lot. But that's almost a year ago.
Do you know anything about her?
I'm afraid I don't.
And you don't know her name?
No, I'm sorry.
Cameron opens the sliding cover of another desk.
I don't think Mr. Brown would like you going through his things.
That's all right, Mrs. Brown. This Helene, who's she?
I don't know. I never was one for shows.
All right, I don't think we need to keep you any longer. We'll just take a look around.
Very good. I suppose it's all right.
She walks off, but the young woman stays on the sofa. The landlady returns to grab her hand and pull her away.
Well, I don't think there's much we can do here. This Kendall Brown seems to be too anonymous to be natural. What do you think of this, sir?
He shows Braddock a show poster, which he reads.
Helene Castle.
He turns to the framed photo.
All my love forever, Helene.
Do you think that's a clue to follow up, sir?
Pretty flimsy one.
Cameron looks at the photo.
I'd say very flimsy, sir.
They both smirk. Cameron looks out the window.
Inspector, look at this.
What?
He joins him looking out.
Isn't that the car in the photograph?
At the door.
He hasn't come back yet.
It's the blonde in the first two photos.
The police are in his room now. They ask about you. The police? Would you like to have a word? No.
She rushes back to the car.
Come on, Cameron. Quick, right.
She drives off as the detectives run down the stairs. Cameron runs out, but Braddock doesn't bother. Watching Cameron give up in the street. Later, she pulls up to a curb and gets out. She walks to an apartment building. At a door inside, she searches for keys. But the door is open.
I heard you come down the hall, Miss French. Visitor.
In the loft, Pryor stands.
Go upstairs, isn't it?
She gives the purse to her maid, who steps away.
Frank. Hello, Pauline.
Oh, Frank.
They embrace.
Oh, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I gave up hoping I'd ever see you again. Ever be holding you in my arms like this again.
He kisses her cheek. And they gaze at each other.
Oh, it's been so long.
I didn't know you were here. When did you get in?
A few hours ago. I wrote you in my letter what time I was going to arrive.
Oh.
She turns away.
Oh, then you didn't get my cable.
Yes. You told me you'd meet me at the airport.
Yes, but I sent another one later. I was so sure it would arrive in time.
She unbuttons her coat.
You mean not to come?
Yes. But it doesn't matter, really. It was just some personal matters, and I thought that perhaps much later.
She hangs the coat on a railing.
Oh, darling. You must have been terribly disappointed I wasn't there to meet you.
Smiling, she returns to him.
Come.
They hold hands and sit down.
Tell me everything. Everything I haven't heard for the past 6 years. How are you? What's going to happen? Tell me everything.
Now, looks like I made a mistake. You didn't want me to come, did you?
It's not that. It's just that now...
No, it's very simple to go back. I haven't unpacked yet. Matter of fact, I haven't even got a hotel.
She leans toward him.
You silly friend.
And kisses his cheek.
I can't tell you what I felt when I got your first letter. Do you know, it went through 3 changes of address. So many things have happened since you left.
She sits up.
But you look just wonderful. Just as big and strong and as attractive.
She stands.
You know that this is the first time I've seen you out of uniform.
Same here.
She salutes.
Hiya, Captain.
At ease, Sergeant.
He pulls her down into his arms. Then draws closer. They kiss tenderly. Then more passionately. Later, upstairs at a vanity, she fixes her makeup.
You still do the same things?
Besides acting, I mean, do you still fly?
Oh, just occasionally.
He looks at the framed photo.
You still race?
She combs her hair.
Well, not much with planes now. I got interested in speedboats a little while ago. I bought myself a motor launch.
What a girl. You know, I'm getting older. I doubt if I'll be able to keep up with a sweet girl anymore.
Oh, I'm much more sensible about it now. From planes to cars to boats, it's slowing up, don't you think?
He picks up a trophy.
I see you're still the same old dead eye. You get quite a few more new cups here. You know, the fellas in the outfit, they used to kid me about going around with a girl who could outshoot Annie Oakley.
He puts it back.
Don't worry, darling. I haven't shot one of my boyfriends for at least a couple of years now.
She dabs on perfume.
Hey, speaking of shooting, you know what happened out at the airport this morning? The fellow was shot and killed just after we got off the plane.
She freezes, then lowers her comb. Standing, she slowly approaches the open doorway and looks down over a railing to Frank.
Were you there?
He looks up.
Was I? I asked him for a light for my cigarette just before he got hit. Standing right next to him. You want to hear all the gory details?
No, thank you. I've already read them in the papers.
He notices a newspaper on the table and takes it.
Yeah, I'll say Scotland Yard was there.
One of the headlines, Who is Kendall Brown?
Yeah, I think it was done from a distance by a sniper of some kind, huh? Hey, it must have been.
He checks his watch.
We better get going. Hey, beautiful. Snap into it, huh? After we find me a hotel, I want to take you to that little Greek restaurant in Soho that we both used to like so much.
All right, I'll hurry.
She returns to her bedroom, and he returns to the newspaper article. Later, lights flash in the night, declaring Magic in the Air, starring Helene Castle. On stage.
Take your places for a feast of magic from the mystic east. First a feat you've seen no living man do, that only one surviving wizard can do. That I hardly need to add is me. And here's a chest with another thing inside.
He turns it with an assistant.
I show it thus.
And opens the front door.
And close it thus.
They close it.
Magic pass. Hey presto. And what do we see?
Helene stands up from it.
Me.
The audience applauds as she steps down from the box's table and goes to a post, where the magician starts to tie her up.
Every night I'm tightly tied in this attitude undignified. In the process I've grown fond of this weird necromancer with the beard and the wand. But, oh, is he going to notice me when he's so busy doing what comes supernaturally?
The ropes fall away.
Hey, presto!
All she ever says to me is, hey, presto!
He pulls her to a smaller table, where he tosses a cloth at her to hold.
I have my dreams, but it seems I'm completely ignored.
Showing an empty cylinder, he drops flowers into it. Braddock and Cameron enter through the stage door and turn to a clerk.
Is Miss Castle in the theater?
Yes, but they don't allow visitors during the show. Scotland Yard.
Scotland Yard. And you want to see Miss Castle?
Did you?
Well, she's just beginning her act.
Is there somewhere we could wait?
Yes. Tommy.
Yes?
Show these two gentlemen from Scotland Yard into the wings, will you? They want to see Miss Castle.
Sure. Follow me, gentlemen.
Tony leads them to a door, which he opens.
Scotland Yard. Nobody got killed, did they?
Yes.
He takes them through. Full on stage.
Oh, I was poor and I was down. When a road show blew into town, they needed an assistant, I heard.
The magician closes a wall around her wrist.
I went and told this mystical jerk, I give my own.
He places a blade in a slot in the wall.
And he took me at my word.
He brings it down, but her hand stays intact.
All she ever said to me is, hey!
And helps the other assistants turn a person-sized box with spikes sticking out of it.
The light, but you might think he hadn't got a heart.
From the wings with Tony, the detectives watch the spikes being pulled out.
I keep up in disgust. Find me a soul with a wholesome capacity for love.
He opens the front door, which has a hole at head level.
With all our secrets to share with
he has her step into the box.
And then
he closes it.
But if he made me his wife,
they insert the spikes again.
Impaling rocks all through my middle.
She sings through the hole.
All she ever said to me is, hey, Presto, my health aching and sick. Each little trick must be slick, so I'm quick to obey. Presto, and I'm here.
She ducks away from the hole.
Watch her disappear.
As they pull out the spikes, Helene walks through the wings.
Oh, Helene, these two men want to see you.
Later, Tommy.
But they're from Scotland Yard.
Just 1 minute.
She moves on behind a back curtain while the box is opened.
Hey, Presto! Helene!
She steps out on stage. She wraps his arms around him, and the front curtain goes down. Helene hurries to the wings as Tony heads on stage.
Sorry to keep you waiting.
It's quite all right. We enjoyed watching your act.
The magician arrives.
This is my partner, Harbin the Great.
How do you do? How do you do?
These gentlemen are from Scotland Yard.
Scotland Yard? Why, is anything wrong?
I don't know.
No, we just want to talk to Miss Castle.
He kisses her cheek.
I'll see you later.
And walks off.
My dressing room is this way. Want to come along?
Thank you. Thank you.
She leads him through the backstage area, where Cameron pauses slightly to admire a showgirl fixing her shoe. On stage, Tony dances on a large representation of a xylophone, while a man plays a real xylophone in the orchestra pit below him. Tony sits on the top row of bars and keeps his feet dancing along the bottom row, consistent with the other man's playing. Tony stands, kicking in time. In Helene's dressing room, she enters.
So, Selby.
The detectives turn to her.
I suppose you want to ask me about Ken. I read the papers.
You knew him then?
I'm his wife.
She sits in a mirror.
But don't let that worry you. Ken and I have been separated for so long that we were almost on speaking terms again.
I see. How long had you been separated?
Oh, about 3 years. We saw each other sometimes. We finally became quite civilized about our differences.
She stands.
In fact, he came to the show a few weeks back. You don't mind if I change?
Oh, no, no, no. Do.
Braddock glances at Cameron, and Helene goes behind a screen.
Not in the way.
You're all right. I've done this before in public. Without a screen.
Quite. You don't know what your husband's been doing lately, I suppose.
No.
Do you know anyone who might have wanted to get him out of the way?
No, but I'm not surprised that he should have ended up like this. He's on a face for excitement when he was a pilot.
Braddock keeps Cameron from wandering for a view.
People call a double act.
She peeks out.
His partner was trouble.
And ducks back in.
But you can't tell us what sort of trouble it was this time.
She steps out in a robe.
I had to guess. I'd say the wrong man's wife.
Oh. Like that, was it?
She sits again, and Braddock takes out Pauline's photo.
Do you happen to recognize this lady?
She looks.
Yes, that's his latest. What's your name, Pauline French.
Pauline French, the actress. Who did I hear mention that name recently?
Oh, you know her. She's all the time in the papers. Rides, shoots, skis, flies. Anything that moves fast and makes a lot of noise. Did you find this on Ken?
Yes.
I see.
From what you say about your husband, those two must have got on well together.
Well. Very well.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Brown.
My name's Anne Castle.
I beg your pardon, Miss Castle. You've been a great help. Oh, there's just one thing. They'll want to identify the body. I imagine as you're his wife, they'll want to get in touch with you shortly.
Well, you can always get me through the theater.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
As Braddock leaves, she turns to Cameron.
Good night.
He smiles.
Good night.
Then finally walks off as Helene touches up her makeup. Upset. And sets the photo aside. In the wings.
What next, sir?
Well, you can do what you like. You're young. I'm going to bed.
What about Pauline French?
Well, she'll keep till tomorrow.
Are you all right, sir?
Yes, thank you.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
As they leave, the man who'd just spoken to them uses a crutch to limp forward, then limp away. Another day, Tower Bridge stands above various sizes of boats on the Thames. One of them, a moderate-sized pleasure boat, is driven by Pauline, with Frank standing behind her.
Well, you've seen everything from Land's End to John O'Groats. What's next?
Anything I say?
Anything you say, darling. Your day.
Okay, I'll tell you what.
He puts an arm around her.
Just stay in the Thames until we hit the sea. We'll cross the channel, land on the coast of France, build ourselves a little hut out of driftwood, spend the rest of our lives alone together. No city, no people, and no past. Just us.
What a wonderful, beautiful dream.
You know, this is a pretty sturdy boat. I bet you could cross the channel on this.
She frowns for a moment.
Don't tell me that you've never tried it.
What do you mean?
I mean, I know Pauline French. If nothing stops her, she goes.
Uh-oh.
What's the matter?
No petrol. We've been doing too much sightseeing. I knew we should have filled her up before we left.
Well, the worst that can happen is that we just keep on drifting. Personally, I can't imagine a better way to spend my time.
A barge steams nearby.
I think I better call someone from the shore.
Stepping away, she waves a handkerchief.
Ahoy!
Soon after, a man drives a small motorboat toward them as Pauline holds the end of a rope out.
Hello.
Hello there.
When he drifts close enough, she tosses the rope to him.
What's wrong, Miss French? Trouble?
Yes, we ran out of petrol. Do you think you could tow us in?
Certainly, Miss French.
Thank you.
As he prepares to tie them together, Pauline returns to Frank.
Well, that's all right. We'll be in a minute.
You knew him, huh?
Yes, he works for the people who look after my boat over there.
She points toward the warehouses on the shore.
Good thing we didn't drift too long. I've got a lot to do for the party tonight.
Oh, that's another thing. I don't understand why...
I'm sorry. It's something I arranged weeks ago. Anyway, it'll give you a chance to meet some of my glamorous leading men.
Yes, I'd love that.
Anyway, I want to be able to show you.
You mean that?
They kiss, then hold each other, looking ahead. Soon after, they ride in the man's boat, paddle to shore. They reach a landing between two buildings, where Frank steps off and helps Pauline.
Anything else I can do, Miss French? Put her on for you.
No, just put enough in to get her across the dry dock. I think I'll overhaul her and put her up for sale.
They climb stairs toward a pub called the Spread Eagle and Crown.
It's on your boat, huh?
Yes, it's really much more trouble than it's worth.
They go down a few steps.
Looks like a pub.
They look out for me.
Spread Eagle. Hey, how about a drink?
No, really, I must get back.
Hello, Miss French.
At the door.
Saw the boy tow you in up the river.
Yes, we ran out of fuel.
Well, come and refuel in here.
have a bitter on the house.
We're in a terrible hurry. Oh, Jonas, I want you to meet a very good friend of mine from America, Mr. Pryor.
From America? Pleased to meet you, Mr. Pryor. Very pleased indeed.
Can I have a word with you in private just for a minute?
Excuse us.
Jones takes Pauline aside and speaks with her. Frank turns away, getting a cigarette, as Pauline holds her head.
Frank, I have to see someone inside for a minute.
Okay. Come inside, Mr. Pryor. Come in and have a quick one. No need to wait out there.
Pauline goes in. And so does Frank. A barmaid puts coins in a register and turns to the bar.
Hello, Miss French. We've missed you, dear.
Yes, I've been very busy.
Wasn't it horrible news?
Yes. Could I have a whiskey, please?
Yes, dear.
They both turn to Frank.
What would you like, Frank?
I have the same, yes.
That you are.
The barmaid steps away as Frank lights a cigarette.
Keep mine warm for me, will you? I'll be back in a minute.
She goes to a back room door and goes in. Frank returns to the bar as the barmaid serves. Frank adds some water to his drink.
American?
That's right.
You can always tell.
You can. French pretty well known, isn't
she? Yeah. She's a lovely person. They take care of a launch back there. You get all sorts here. All the common old river characters. Then the ladies and gentlemen like Miss French who keep their boats with us. Excuse me.
She goes to serve another patron. Taking the two glasses, Frank walks across the busy pub and looks around. He finds an empty bench and sits below a mirror, spotting Pauline talking to a limping man as the back room door closes again. Frank drinks thoughtfully. When she comes out, he stands to meet her.
Sorry about that, darling. Just some trouble about the boat.
What made you decide to sell it all of a sudden?
I just had enough of it, I guess.
She drinks.
Well, sit down, huh?
They say that you put the launch up to sail.
Yes.
Is it on account of what happened to him?
No, of course not. I don't think I want this.
She hands her drink to the barmaid.
Do you mind if we go, Frank?
All right.
Right in the airport, too, in front of all those people. Shocking you. Shocking. You know.
Pauline steps away to leave, and Frank hands back his empty glass to follow her outside.
The barmaid in there was...
We must get a taxi.
She intently looks for one.
She was talking about Kendall Brown, wasn't she?
Yes.
You knew him then, didn't you?
Yes.
Why didn't you mention this to me yesterday?
Was there any need?
She steps away, searching, and he follows.
You must have known him pretty well. You came here quite often with him, didn't you? Didn't you?
That's right.
Is that what's been bothering you? Is that what you're holding back?
Look, Frank, you left here 6 years ago. Since then, I've lived my own life. No strings, no ties.
It's just that if there's anything wrong, I want to help.
There's nothing wrong, and I don't want any help. I just want to be left alone. Don't you understand that? I just want to be left alone.
She hurries away.
Taxi!
Chasing a cab, which stops. She gets into it. Behind Frank, the limping man leaves the pub and goes around a corner. Frank turns and spots him.
Hey, mister! Hey, mister!
He starts following him.
Mister!
When the limping man heads down to the river, Frank picks up his pace. He reaches the top of the stairs and slows. Then takes a few steps down. The limping man is gone. With a hand on his hip, Frank considers. Then goes back up the stairs and away. Later, Pauline lies on top of her bed, despondent. She glances at the phone on her night table. She reaches for it, but hears a voice on the other extension, so she hangs up. Getting up from the bed, she steps to the door and goes out onto the landing.
Sylvia, please, do mind. Don't keep the phone occupied. I want to use it.
Oh, certainly, ma'am. I'm just finishing. I'll see you tomorrow, George.
She hangs up.
Thank you. Have we got enough glasses and drinks and everything?
Yes, ma'am.
Good. Oh, and would you bring me up one of your headache powders, please?
Certainly.
Pauline returns to her bedroom and closes the door. Stepping to the bed, she sits on it as she picks up the phone again. She dials.
Hello? Would you put me through to Mr. Pryor's room, please? Yes, I see. Yes, I would like to leave a message. Ask him to ring Miss French as soon as he comes in.
Cynthia enters with water in the powder.
Thank you.
Sadly, Pauline hangs up and holds her head.
Not there, ma'am.
No.
She accepts the water and powder and holds the glass to her forehead. She lowers it and is about to take the medicine.
It's all right, I'll go.
Pauline strides to the door and out onto the landing.
Coming!
Smiling, she hurries down the stairs and past a table set up as a bar to answer the door, where she finds Braddock and Cameron.
Miss French?
Her smile fades.
Yes?
Inspector Braddock, Scotland Yard.
Oh. Yes?
May we come in?
Well, all right.
She steps aside, and the detectives enter.
I hope it won't take too long. I'm expecting rather a lot of people from here.
So I see. Well, I'll try and make it as brief as possible. We would have chosen yesterday, but you were in such a hurry.
What do you mean?
Did you know Kendall Brown?
Yes.
You've read the papers?
Yes.
You were great friends, weren't you?
I knew him.
But, quite well, hmm?
Quite well.
Did you often visit him?
Yesterday was the first time in a long while.
Who took this photograph, Miss Fletcher?
Cameron hands her a copy of the one found on Brown.
He did. Where did you find this?
It was found on the dead man.
Oh. I didn't think he still carried it around with him. Funnily enough, it's the only picture I've ever liked of myself. He gave me the negative. Put it in large.
She hands the framed photo to Braddock.
Yes. It is very good.
He hands it to Cameron.
Are you sure that you haven't had anything to do with Kendall Brown recently?
No. We met occasionally to have a drink, but that was just for old time's sake.
But you had some important business to discuss with him yesterday, didn't you? You called on him three times.
Three times?
The landlady says you called twice before we arrived. The third time you came, you found we were there. You left rather fast.
I felt lonely. I wanted to see someone, so I went to him.
Is that all?
Yes, that is all.
Miss French, if you think very hard and try to help us, perhaps we in turn could help you.
In what way?
Oh, I don't know. We have been known to be helpful to some people. This is a murder case, Miss French.
All right, Inspector, I'll try and help you, but just at this moment I am in a hurry. I've got people coming and I have a headache. If only you could have come earlier.
We tried earlier. You were out all day.
Were you with Franklin Pryor?
How do you know? Have I been followed?
No, Miss French. Perhaps it's a curious coincidence. Mr. Pryor was at the airport at the time of the shooting. He gave us your address to contact him. It was a coincidence, wasn't it?
Yes. He's a friend of mine, a visitor. And I would appreciate it very much if he were not involved in any of this.
I understand. But, just in case we do want to contact him, is this still his address?
No, he has a hotel now, the Sussex. But you won't...
No, we won't. I tell you what, Miss French, you think over everything you can tonight, and then you can call us tomorrow morning. Perhaps you'll have thought of something by then. Will that be all right?
Yes, Inspector, I'll call you tomorrow.
Good. May we have the...
Braddock holds out his hand, and Pauline gives back the photo.
Thank you, Miss French. Good day.
The detectives go to the door, which Cynthia opens. Braddock leaves, but Cameron lingers to share a smile with the maid. Then he leaves, and Cynthia closes the door.
This is the young one, ma'am. Wasn't he crazy there?
Pauline buries her head in her hands.
Something wrong, ma'am? Did I say something? Oh,
she massages her temples.
No, I'm just being silly. People will be here in a minute. Come, we must hurry. We've got a lot to do.
She steps away. The walls seem to be closing in on Pauline. But what is her real connection to Kendall Brown's death? Will Frank be able to help her? And will he want to? Find out in the conclusion next time on Movies for the Blind. You may remember when the detectives visited Brown's flat, there was a young woman doing her nails and trying to smoke and generally annoying the landlady, who we'll guess was her mother. She didn't speak, but she still made an impression. Well, that was one of the first roles for Jean Marsh, who'd go on to become one of England's great actresses on stage, screen, and TV, best known for co-creating and starring in the landmark series Upstairs, Downstairs, which had a bit of a revival last year. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, go to the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. Also, check out the Movies for the Blind page on Facebook and the channel on YouTube. More new stuff to come there. Some MP3s are hosted by Blind File Sharing. To find out more, visit blindfilesharing.com. And the movies are from the Internet Archive. So please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.